The host of the Bill Shanks Show, 93.1 FM in Macon, 99.5 FM in Warner Robins. You can also go to Macon.com and read his thoughts. Hey, Bill, good morning.
Don't people know I've got something to do at 9:05 on Thursdays? Why would they schedule something at 9:05 hour? Who do they think they are?
I know. Come on. What's going on here? It's must-listen radio. Anyway, how you been?
I've been pretty good. Enjoyed yesterday's game, and definitely enjoyed the draft for sure. It was fun seeing them load up even more in that farm system. So it's going to be even more interesting moving forward after what they did on Monday.
Well, having seen Kyle Wright face the Dogs as a starter for the last 2 years, and then it's funny how, I mean, Vanderbilt's pitching is so good. I went back and looked at his freshman year. He came out of the bullpen. I mean,
right. Most
schools have a talent like that, you know, and he's immediately in the rotation, but that's not necessarily the case with Vanderbilt. But having seen him pitch the last 3 years, and I know there were and I was reading a lot of the tweets that you're answering, and there were a lot of Braves fans that were like, we need a bat, we need a bat, we need somebody that can hit. But it's like if Kyle Wright falls to you at number five, it's a no-brainer that you take him. So I know you were excited about that, and then getting a guy like Drew Waters, number 41, Monday was definitely a good day for the Braves.
Well, it was amazing, David, really. I mean, kind of go back to Friday night when actually we had talked, we got a couple of guys who really follow me on Twitter who call the show and they talk about the draft probably a little bit more than most of our audience wants to hear. But, you know, I was following it pretty closely, obviously, since the Braves had a top pick. And on Friday, we were actually talking about the possibility of Brennan McKay falling to five.
Yeah.
That, you know, that seemed to be, to me, something that might happen. And because it seemed like, obviously, at that point on Friday, Kyle Wright was locked into number one to Minnesota. Hunter Green seemed locked into the Reds at two. Mackenzie Gore seemed locked into San Diego at three. Tampa Bay was the wild card. And there were rumors that Tampa Bay, at that point on Friday, might go cheap and might do an underslot deal with someone. Even a kid's name was Bubba Thompson, who was ranked like 26th by MLB.com on their top 200. And I'm like, well, you know, what if Brendan McKay is there for the Braves? And we were like going over scenarios of, because they liked him as a hitter, and, you know, well, what are they going to do? He's a first baseman. So anyway, we go from that, and then I get home, and like an hour later, someone texts me and said, there's something on Twitter about Kyle Wright not being a lock at one. And I think it was Jim Callis saying that he might fall the Braves at five. And so I text someone with the Braves, and I said, is this possible? And they said, yes. And I'm like, my gosh, what kind of fortune is that to have that possibly happen? Because I'm telling you, I asked a Braves scout at spring training, because I had watched a couple of Wright's games on that Friday night thing where they would, you know, show a lot of the stuff on SEC Network, and they were like, you don't need to watch that. We're not going to get him. And all of a sudden, boom, it falls into place. Tampa Bay wound up taking McKay, obviously, because Minnesota changed to Royce Lewis. And once Royce Lewis was the number one pick, I think everyone knew, because there was so much uncertainty for the Braves even leading up to the draft. They didn't know. I texted someone Monday afternoon who was in the draft room, and we don't know. We're praying for Wright, but we just don't know what is going to happen at 1-4. So it was such a good stroke of luck for them, I think, to get Kyle Wright, who, I mean, you got the best college baseball pitcher for the year to fall to you at five. That's a pretty good pick.
You know, and it's funny, and I was thinking about this with you, it's kind of ironic because you were here for G-Day. He was pitching that day against the Dogs.
I know.
At the same time.
I know. And I tried to talk my guys to go in there, and they wanted to go home. They're old, so they wanted to get home. I remember that because he pitched on Saturday instead of, Friday.
They pitched backwards with him. He was there too. They have a guy named Patrick Raby who was their Friday guy, and they threw Wright as their Saturday guy. And the weird thing that day about about him pitching here in Athens was that he went seven innings and gave up one hit, and it was a bloop single. And then they made a pitching change, and Cam Shepard, the Georgia freshman shortstop, terrific shortstop, homered off the in the first at bat against the reliever, and Georgia won that game 1-0. So Wright got a no decision that day against the Dogs, and he only gave up one hit in seven innings. And he had no-hit stuff that day, too. I mean, he was really, really good. And, you know, the other thing, I mean, and I had a couple people ask me, did the Braves steal another Georgia player in Drew Waters? And I was like, no, this was one of those situations where no matter who picked Waters, he was going to go. It's not like the Braves are keeping him from coming to Georgia. So, I mean, to me at least, if he's got selected as high as he did, it's the Braves that took him too. So I was excited that they got him as well.
Yeah, this isn't. I know this is a bad comparison. This isn't a George Lombard.
George Lombard, yeah. No,
I mean this. I'll tell you about Waters, David. I was actually we were doing our show on location about 2 weeks ago, and at that point there was a lot of uncertainty about what's going on with the five. And one of the Brave scouts I talked to was actually at Waters' game that day at Etowah. I don't know what it was in the playoffs, but it was one of the playoff games, obviously. And I'd never heard the name Drew Waters. I just didn't pay attention as much as I should have, I guess. But anyway, he said, "Yeah, we're here at Etowah watching Drew Waters." And I said, "Oh yeah, tell me about him." He said, "Well, he's a good hitter. The kid's a great athlete and so forth. And we're even thinking about him at five." And I mean, I said at five, and I guess I was embarrassed that there was somebody they were considering at five that I didn't know who he was, and he was from Georgia. But he said, "Yeah, we're he's an option for us." I mean, there was so much uncertainty over the last couple of weeks of what was going to happen, because I think there was a fear that the top four players, Gore, Green, McKay, and Wright, were going to be there, and the Braves were going to have to make a tougher decision because they were not sold on Royce Lewis. There was some split in the organization about Royce Lewis, who wound up going first. But, I mean, they even considered Drew at five.
Wow.
And that tells you, I think, how much they think about his potential. When I saw it unfold on Monday night, David, the first thing I thought of was Drew Waters kind of being like a Brian McCann type prospect. And I'm not talking about position, of course, because he's a totally different player.
Right.
But as far as a hometown kid, backyard, second round, maybe not as heralded as some others who go in the first round, maybe should have gone in the first round, but they got him in the second round because it's a, I can't remember exactly where they got Brian in the second round, but it sounds very similar to that situation.
Talking with Bill Shanks.
Bill, I wanted to switch gears to the current Braves. And yesterday I was watching the game, and there was a note during the broadcast about Bartolo Colon traveling with the team, which is kind of rare for an injured player. But a Braves pitching coach and the staff wanted to, monitor him more closely and work with him, in person. And there was an article from Dave O'Brien, the AJC, this morning saying that Brian Snitker talked about maybe even pitching a six-man rotation when Colon comes back. I know a lot of people have kind of thought that we might have seen the last of Bartolo Colon in a Braves jersey, but it seems like that might not be the case.
Well, I don't know what's going on. I don't know exactly the situation. I mean, I think they're trying to make chicken salad out of chicken what. And I don't know how they can do it. I mean, the six-man rotation thing is different, obviously. I'm surprised more people don't do that, to be honest with you, but that's another story, another discussion. But I think they're just trying to save some value of him, Sam, so they can get some financial relief for him at some point. I mean, I think I said last week, if they can get someone to say, all right, well, you pay everything except $1 million and we'll take him, because I mean, they know what's what here. And I think they're just trying to, sometimes teams have to put on this face to try to maintain their value of whatever the value is left in a player. And I think, there may be a little saving face here, too. I mean, let's be honest, when a front office makes a move and it doesn't work out and it backfires to a certain extent, I think they try to do everything they possibly can to make it have some some positive come out of it. And, I mean, I guess that's all it is. I mean, I don't think he should ever pitch again in the Braves uniform. I'm sitting down. Brian Snicker probably thinks the same way. But, you know, if the front office is trying to figure this out so they can salvage something for him, whatever. I mean, to be honest with you, I've stressed over and over, be patient with his kids. I'm ready with him. Lucas Sims pitched 8 shutout innings the other day in Gwinnett. Patrick Weigel, another kid 2 years ago, 10th round pick out of University of Houston, has made it up AAA, pitched 7 innings, and was great in his last start. I'm kind of ready to see him. And so I'm kind of ready for Jaime Garcia to be traded because they can take advantage of his value. And I'm kind of ready for R.A. Dickey to go away if that's possible. So, I mean, I'm not practicing what I've preached here, but I'm just kind of ready to see him. And I think maybe Sean Newcomb's success last Saturday is a reason for that desire to want to see these other kids. But I don't know what they're trying to pull off with Bartolo Colon. We'll just have to wait and see.
Not one of the kids, but Chris Medlin has pitched pretty well in Gwinnett at another strong performance yesterday. Is there a timetable you think on when we could see him possibly get a call up?
No, I don't think so. I think they're going to be patient with him. I mean, they want to make sure his stuff is okay. I mean, Chris is good enough to wear in all levels of the minor leagues. He can probably get people out even if his stuff's not 100%. So I don't know what the reports are. The only report I heard about was that his fastball was still, the velocity was still not there. That they were hoping that he would build up more velocity as he goes along here. And I don't know what he was clocked at or anything last night. But I mean, that may be less relevant on the grand scheme of things. But I would think at least a couple more starts. But I don't know if they're going to bring him up to be a starter or a reliever. I'm not sure what the plan is. I don't know if they do yet, to be honest with you.
Talking with Bill Shanks, I was, you were talking about Drew Waters, and you said you were a little embarrassed that you didn't know much about him. Sam brought up Medlin Tuesday, and I thought Sam was misspeaking, and I had just completely forgotten that the Braves had re-signed him. So I didn't know if, like, if you're going to throw Colon or Dickey out there, hell, throw Medlin out there. I mean, he's got a better chance of getting guys out than these two have so far this year.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I mean, I don't know what else to say. And I don't really hate Dickey, but, I mean, he's, his ERA is 5.5. So, yeah. I mean, it's not like either one of those guys have been able to do much this year.
Right, no. Well, and again, David, I say this damn stadium.
Yeah.
I mean, I just think that some decisions would be a little bit different if not for the fact they're in the first year of a brand new stadium that they're wanting people to come see. And I may be totally wrong, but I'm not. I just don't think I am, because I think if they were still in Turner Field, would some decisions be made differently? And I just think they would. I mean, whether they would admit it or not. And look, teams make decisions all the time like that, and we know that. If we're smart sports fans, I think we all know that happens, even if they say that it doesn't. But I think they, if they realize that, look, I mean, David, Russ Brown, and my co-host, my producer, and I can't go to the show from SunTrust Park tomorrow, but because I got something to do here that kind of precludes me leaving early. But I mean, we're going to replay the interviews of Kyle Wright on my show tomorrow, so we can leave early, and we're going to go watch Sean Newcomb pitch. I mean, both he and I wanted to go watch Sean Newcomb pitch tomorrow night. And I think, not that we're necessarily representative of the entire Braves country, but I think if they realize that if these kids come up and do well, fans are going to want to come see them, not Bartolo Colon and R.A. Dickey. I mean, Jaime Garcia's done great, but we know what they've got to do with him. They need to take advantage of that value quick. I mean, that guy is doing great, and they got him to give them some innings and then trade him. Well, I'm sure at some point, around the All-Star break or a little after, they're going to do that. But, man, these kids, you can't tell me that the fans of this team would not want to come see Sean Newcomb, Lucas Sims, and Patrick Weigel if they do well. And they might not, but I think fans will still want to come check them out like we're going to do tomorrow night when we go see Newcomb.
And I'm assuming that if Brandon Phillips gets traded, then we'll see Ozzie Albies get called up as well?
Yeah, probably so. I mean, Ozzie's been better here in the last – you know, breaking the what he's played so far in the last couple of weeks. He was on the DL for a while, something minor, but he's done very well as of late. So yeah, he's getting there. He's getting close, and I don't know what the market will be for, you know, for a second baseman that's only a second baseman. And I kind of wonder too, David, you know, with Adonis Garcia out, if they would think about moving Brown over to third a little bit if they needed to, you know, to put Ozzie, if they thought Ozzie was ready to come up, would they think if they couldn't trade Brandon Phillips, well, we could play Brandon at third. So, I mean, that's kind of something they thought about too.
Hey, well, let me ask you this, because I said this earlier in the show, because I said, you know, in the past when I bring up Rio Ruiz's name, I don't always get the feeling from you. It's not something you've said, but it just kind of sounds like in your voice. It's like you just don't really feel like he's that guy at third for the Braves down the road. Is that an accurate assessment of your of kind of the way you feel about him?
I'm skeptical. I think I am a little skeptical. I mean, I'm a fan of Adonis Garcia. I think he's better than people think, and I know the stat heads don't like him, but I think the best part about him getting hurt is we're going to be able to chance to see Rio Ruiz. And I think maybe the lack of power, you know, at a premium position like third, a little bit of a concern for me. I think Austin Riley, a kid that's in high A right now, is a better prospect. But I think Rio's got talent. I think Rio, if Rio's able to stick and not lose his spot, he's got a chance to be better in 2 years than he is right now. You know, he's gotten better every year once he's been somewhere, if that makes sense. I mean, he was at Gwinnett when he first came over. I mean, excuse me, Mississippi when he first came over. He was better in the second half of the year after being inconsistent. You know, when he went to Gwinnett, he was better at the end of last year and then pretty decent this year to begin the season. So I just think with that, there's going to have to be some patience with him, and I don't know how patient you can be sometimes at third base, but I don't know if he's the long-term answer, but I'm glad that we're going to have a chance to see him. That to me is, we need to. I mean, that's the thing, David. It's like, okay, stadium's here. You want to get people in there. You want to win. I understand that. I do too. But, you know, we need to see Rio Ruiz. We need to see Sean Newcomb for the rest of the year. We need to see Lucas Sims or Patrick Weigel, because they're going to have some other decisions to make about these positions in the offseason, and now's the time to check it out.
Bill, wanted to switch gears to the Falcons, who they allowed Michael Vick to honorarily retire as an Atlanta Falcon. And I know there's a big chunk of the fan base that is still loyal to Vick, but for me, and I think for Dave as well, this was just a bad move, because this is a guy who definitely had his dark spots, including getting arrested and sent to federal prison for killing dogs. So it just seems like this was something that the Falcons didn't have to do and, quite frankly, shouldn't have done.
Correct. You're right. And they're an embarrassment. And they lost a 25-point lead in the Super Bowl, by the way. And they should not have done this with Michael Vick. It was stupid. It was unnecessary. It lessened and cheapened the honor that they should have given to Roddy White, who should be honored in every way as the best receiver to ever play there as of today. And, you know, it was embarrassing. To be honest with you, I've barely spoken about it on my show because I can feel my blood pressure going up sky high. And I've almost apologized to my listeners that, you know I shouldn't be a whiny little baby, and I clean that up about the Falcons. But I get sick of hearing the stuff from Dan Quinn, and I get sick of hearing the kumbaya stuff, and I just wish they'd shut up. Then now they've gone and done this with Michael Vick, and I don't know. I need to get back on track here with him, because I've rooted for him for a long time. But I mean, I thought it was amazing, incredible of what they did. And you know, that guy, I know he served his time, I know he paid his price, but he absolutely handcuffed that organization. And someone tweeted me, I forgot that you mentioned this, I don't know when it was, but somebody tweeted to me about that and said, I certainly wish, since they're doing so much to make everything clean and pretty with Michael Vick, they would give me a refund on my 2007 season tickets. and you know what? That's an excellent point, because if you're so gung-ho about everything being great with Michael Vick, you need to remember the people who had paid a lot of money that year thinking that Bobby Petrino was going to come in here with Michael Vick and they were going to be a Super Bowl contender, and they paid a ton of money, and look what happened. And instead, you're hugging him and giving him all these accolades. And the fact is, because his career was cut short with the Falcons, how good was he for the Atlanta Falcons? I mean, the game in Green Bay was great. They were a lot of great memories, a lot of great games from some good performances. But in the grand scheme of things, what does he even rank in Falcons history? Is he that good? Is he? Where is he on the quarterback list? Where is he on the all-time list of players? I mean, he was very good, don't get me wrong, but where does he rank? And yet they're treating him like he's the best quarterback they've ever had.
So, quarterback's a great point. Would you put him behind Bart and obviously Matt Ryan? He goes behind him, but would you put him behind Bartkowski too?
Sam, you need to understand something about me. When it comes to Steve Bartkowski, everybody is behind Steve Bartkowski.
Yeah, you got that right.
Every
you
single
and me.
Player who's ever laced up to play quarterback in the National Football League is behind the great Steve Bartkowski.
I'm with and you, I'm man. I love him.
I'm not kidding. I adore him. I love him. I can't help it. I sound like a silly schoolgirl with a crush when he comes on my show because he's the best quarterback to ever play.
And he's a great guy, too.
Oh, my God. He's so great. You're right, Dave. He's tremendous, and he excuses my silliness when I talk about him because when you're a child and you're a little boy and there's a quarterback like Steve Bartkowski, there's hero worship beyond belief. It's different than any other. Think about little boys in New England, what they feel about Tom Brady. Think about little boys in Pittsburgh, what they think about Roethlisberger. You can go all around history of the NFL. For people in my generation, the age your generation, of course, as well, Steve Bartkowski can do no wrong. Nothing. Not even the same breath as Steve Bartkowski.
Shoot, I feel that way about Matt Ryan right now.
Well, yeah, I mean, Matt's got ways to go to catch Bart, but we'll see.
Hey, my buddy Carl just texted me and said he wants his 2007 refund as well.
See there?
Exactly.
Exactly. I mean, and it's a good point. It's a really good point. I'm glad that guy said that, and I think, how about it, Arthur? You got money. You own Home Depot. I think everybody ought to go to Lowe's, but, you got Home Depot.
Oh, good stuff, Bill. Always. Thanks for shifting your schedule around a little bit for us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for doing that as well. I appreciate it.
And tell Bart next time he's on your show, we said hello.
Oh, he's a beast.
He's the best. Thanks, Bill.
He came on right before the Super Bowl, but believe me, it definitely wasn't his fault.
I love it. We'll get you next week. Thanks, Bill.
All right, guys.
All right.
Thank you, man. Bye-bye.
Bill Shanks.